A monk, today's Teisho will be on case 18 in the Mumonkan, in the U Menkwan. It's entitled Tozan's 3 pounds of flax. A monk asked Tozan, "What is Buddha?" Tozan replied, 3 pounds of flax. Mumon's comment, old Tozan attained the poor Zen of a clam. He opened the two halves of the shell a little and exposed all the liver and intestines inside. But tell me, how do you see Tozan? Mumon's verse, 3 pounds of flax came sweeping along. Close were the words, but closer was the meaning. Those who argue about right and wrong are those enslaved by right and wrong. Earlier this morning, I looked in the book and I decided to pick a different koan to discuss. And I put a marker in the koan, and then I went into the kitchen and started doing some other things, preparing for lunch. At some point, the marker fell out of the book. And when I came in to sit down to find it, I couldn't find it. And as I'm looking through the koans, I can't seem to find the one I wanted to talk about. It's like it's disappeared. I know it hasn't because, you know, this is type and it doesn't disappear. But it's gone. You know, I can't find it. I have the feeling my true self doesn't really want me to talk about that koan. So when I was looking through the koans, I had the feeling that this is a koan I have to deal with instead. And I think that's probably a good idea. Who knows? We'll see, right? For a few minutes, there's a kind of a strange feeling. It's not a comfortable feeling because people are waiting for me to get started and I'm thinking, now where's that darn koan, right? I've talked about this koan a million times. Why can't I find it, right? And it's like, then I thought, well, maybe I'm not supposed to find it. It's not so much like providence. It's like my big mind is telling me to do something else, and I don't quite want to do that. But finally, I think time is running out, so I should take this one after all and do what my big mind is saying. But now it's totally up in the air what I'm going to talk about. So, you know, actually Teisho is always supposed to be like that. The word Teisho means offering. It doesn't mean lecture. Ideally, you're supposed to enter deep samadhi and then you're supposed to take the koan and see what happens. Let the big mind do the driving. So if it doesn't work out, you can blame the big mind. But it's going to work out no matter what happens, right? I mean, I was thinking this morning that if you really pay attention to things like eyes or ears, they're quite remarkable instruments, if you want to call them that. And you have to ask yourself, how did these things ever come to be? Because you know, there was light before there were eyes. Yeah, definitely, right? There was solar energy before there were eyes. And at some moment, living beings developed eyes to take advantage of the light. Yeah, and it must have been kind of an odd affair, right? Because suddenly there were animals with eyes because there's light energy. And so they developed the ability to see light, and I just think that's amazing. You know, it's somehow part of evolution that there's this energy in the world, these forms of life energy, and that living creatures have evolved apparatuses to appreciate or to connect with that life energy. And maybe that's what we're doing with our Zazen practice, actually, is like evolving apparatuses to encounter life energy. My feeling is life energy is already there, and what we're sitting doing on the cushion, hour after hour, is trying to grow a pair of eyes that will allow us to encounter this this life energy. And I don't think that's so far-fetched. I really do think that when you do Zazen, you're developing new apparatuses, you know, new ways of experiencing the world. And I really do believe, and I think even science says it's true, we're sort of rewiring our brains, quite literally, restructuring consciousness on the cushion. There's been a lot of research, and I'm very interested in this, on how brains change in adulthood. You know, when I was young, we were always told that the brain was pretty much the way it is at birth, or in the early months of one's life, and after that it stayed the same, except that you lost a lot of brain cells as you got older. Very recently, people have begun to do research into what they call neuroplasticity. And that is the idea that the brain doesn't stop developing when you're a little child, that as an adult, the brain also is developing all the time. And it's fascinating to me that these connections that we have created in the brain are dying all the time. They're disappearing, they're fading, and we're making new connections all the time. And so we're really creating our world all the time, our mental world, our experiential world, all the time. And we're not just creating it in a kind of vacuum, I think. We're creating it in order to encounter the world more, or we could create it in order to encounter the world more fully and more richly, like those primitive creatures who somehow evolved eyes, you know. I think we're doing the same kind of thing. We're trying to evolve apparatuses for experiencing life energy more fully and completely. And, we don't have to do this. You know, I can't help but think about all the people who are getting up every morning and watch television and TV all day, and then they go to work and they sit behind a screen, and then they come home and, what do you know, more TV, you know. And life is very one-dimensional, and I tend to feel that they're creating a mind that's very small. I mean, no, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I think this is not a big world that such people live in. And I think that when we begin to be unhappy with that world, begin to feel that something's missing, you know, we come to the cushion, and then the hard work of Zen is like evolving. Now that part, I know if you're a scientist, you know it's not true. I mean, we're not evolving as a species, but we're developing sense organs, mental apparatuses that will let us experience the world in a radically different way. One way to think about koan practice is that it's trying to solve an issue or a question or a puzzle. And this is how most people understand koans. In fact, there used to be a book that was very popular called 101 Zen Koans with Answers, right? And indeed, in Japan, they actually published such a book. Apparently, there were a bunch of roshis who had like a secret book of answers that had been given by their teachers and so on. And apparently, some sort of renegade Roshi, renegade Zen master, published it. And he said, let's bring it out in the open, you know. And it created a huge scandal. And, you know, that's all quite foolish because there are a sort of standard answers to some of the koans, but the koans are really not about giving a particular kind of answer or having a particular kind of insight. You know, so, when I was working on my dissertation, I was working on a poet named John Milton. And I couldn't understand what Milton was up to as a poet. And then one day I went to the library and I read a book on the modern world. And it said, you know, people in the modern world are different from people in previous periods of time because they think this way, and it sketched it out. And when I read that, it was like, of course, Milton is a modern person, right? Now, this is obviously maybe true, maybe not true, but it allowed me to write my dissertation and get a PhD in English, you know, for better or for worse. But the point is, it was an insight, right? It was like, oh, I've got it. Milton is a modernist, you know. So then I could sit down and write this dissertation that, you know, has gathered dust for 30 years and move on with my life, you know. Now, that's not what happens with koans. Now, you know, you may have, as you go through the sesshin, existential insights, and those are not foolish. So you might come away with the different philosophy of life as a result of sesshin, and you might have insights like I need to be more patient, or I need to be kinder to others. Those are insights that are a very important part of Zen practice, but they're not the essence of Zen practice. The essence of Zen practice is like the transformation of your consciousness. So it's like suddenly eyes are going to sprout in your head where you had no eyes. See, no particular insight, but you'll see differently. Yeah. So the koans actually have no answers in the sense that there's a particular proposition or insight that you can verbalize. All is one. All is not one. See, there's a koan that says mind is Buddha. And then there's a koan that says mind is not Buddha, you know, actually. And that's good. It's saying, you know, these are just verbal formulations. What you really need to go through is a transformation of your experience. And that's like we're all sitting on the cushion trying to grow a new pair of eyes or a new pair of ears, you know. And that's pretty much what we're up to. So please don't think that you're trying to come up with some kind of proposition. What you're supposed to be doing is experiencing the world in a different way. And how do you go about that? How would you possibly go about that? Well, it requires stepping outside of all of our presuppositions and all of our assumptions about the world. Now, you know, many people believe that's absolutely impossible. It's like, that's all we have. We have our experiences, we have culture, but actually that's not true. You know, we can step out. And the way we do it is by tapping into our big mind, the big mind. See, that personal mind is a very small part of consciousness. You know, when I was growing up, scientists used to say we only use 10% of our brains. And that was a very appealing explanation for many things when I was a teenager. I thought, of course, this is why my parents are so stupid. They're only using 10% of their brains. However, but of course, I too am only using 10% of my brain. But it turns out that was false, right? Actually, we're using all of our brains all of the time, but only 10% of the brain is occupied by consciousness. So conscious awareness is the smallest part of the mental functioning, actually. It's about 10%. And scientists have been interested to notice that the other 90% is busily occupied processing information, but it does it behind the scenes in a way the little mind never notices. So, you know, this is so common. You know, we're walking through a field and we feel suddenly elated and youthful, and then we notice the smell of cherry blossoms, and you know, we think, oh, it's great to be alive, right? Well, that great to be alive moment is like at the end of a long chain, and the information has been processed below the level of our consciousness. And yet at the end, we step back in the persona of the little self and say, oh, it's great to be alive, right? But all the body is drawing in information. A deep mind is processing information, and we never see any of that. But the miracle is that somehow all of this is synthesized, and it comes into our consciousness, and suddenly we smile and say, isn't life great? So it is really possible to step outside of the little mind and our ordinary way of thinking, and we do this by tapping into the big mind. This is like the supercomputer that our little laptop is hooked up to, you know. And the foundation of Zen practice is learning how to access the supercomputer. And so first step in growing new eyes is learning how to step outside of the familiar world and get more information about the world. You know, you can't really notice what you haven't... If you don't have eyes, you're not picking up any light, right? So you've got to somehow start finding a way to be aware of light. And you don't have that apparatus, so you've got to get outside of your familiar ways of experience. So first thing we learn to do is access the supercomputer. And that's the breath perception koan and the mu koan. So when you're sitting on the cushion, watching your breath, you're trying to enter a state of mind in which the subject-object split, which is a basic element of ordinary experience, begins to disappear, and we can be in the moment without second-guessing ourselves. It's like we can be in the moment fully without thoughts, judgments, emotions overwhelming us. And if we're in the moment fully for a while, the mind gets calm, we begin to feel better, we begin to feel more alert. And if you stay in that state for a while, you might notice that your mind begins to go strangely. You know, your mind begins to go blank. You know, you watch the breath and you watch the breath and you watch the breath, and after a while, mind begins to go a blank. When you follow the breath out, 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 there's this blankness. And this is the, if you reach that point, you've pretty much finished with the breath perception koan. It's no secret. And then it's time to do mu. And mu means entering the supercomputer by focusing again and again on this blank space. So you say, and at the end of the mu, when you look at your mind, there should be this darkness or this blankness. Now this is absolutely crucial. This is where it all happens. This is the gateless gate. This is the gate of no barrier. This is the face of Buddha. This is the face of God. When little mind looks at big mind, all it ever sees is darkness forever. But what can happen is that we begin to have access to big mind little by little. One way to think about this is that when you're a child, the boundary between big mind and little mind is much more open. As you grow up, as you're educated into being a human being, you know, you're gradually taught to wall off big mind. Yeah, you gradually create, to be a little self, to be a person, you gradually shut out big mind. And you probably have to do that, actually, to be a functioning human being. But ultimately, that's very crippling because we're stuck in the little laptop, right? So what we do when we sit on the cushion and call Mu is we're coming straight up to big mind, and or we're coming straight up, I should say, to the wall that we have constructed between ourselves and big mind. And this is actually like, in a way, facing a wall. You say, oh, and then there's this blank darkness. And it might seem dead, but ultimately you'll begin to notice that it seems impenetrable. It's not so much dead as impenetrable, inscrutable, silent, impassable, right? Now this is the wall that we all sit in front of when we do Zen practice. All Buddhas and Bodhisattvas all face the wall. In fact, in Chinese this is called Piquan. This is Piquan, wall staring, wall sitting. This is the essence of Zen practice. You know, when Bodhidharma came from India to China, he sat facing a wall for 9 years in a cave outside of Shaolin Temple, what was later to become Shaolin Temple. But people don't understand, he was facing a wall, yes, but what he was really facing is the same wall you're facing when you do Mu Koan. So when you come up to that blankness and you call, you say, oh, and you reach that blankness, you're facing the wall that Bodhidharma faced, that the Buddha faced, that all the Buddhas and patriarchs for all times have faced. This is the, as I say, this is it. This is the place where it all happens. Now, this is the most wonderful and amazing thing, I think, in the world. That this is the gateless gate. But it's very hard at first for us to enter the gateless gate or to open the gateless gate, because we have fear, we have various kinds of desires, projections, we have various kinds of aspirations, we have anger, we have envy, whatever. All of these obstacles, timidity, whatever. And so we come up to the wall and we can't pass through, but we want to pass through because we know that enlightenment is on the other side of that wall, or a Buddha is on the other side of that wall. And this is what the Mu Koan is really about. You know, for much of your time, you're going to be sitting on the cushion, facing the wall, facing the wall, facing the wall. And it may seem frustrating, enervating, you know, it may drain your energy, whatever, but if you just keep sitting there, eventually what's going to happen is that your true self is going to open it up to you, and true self is going to come through that wall to you. You won't have to pass through. True self is coming for you. And when true self comes, it's going to be like, and I've talked about this before, but there's no other way to describe it. It's like it's like divine possession. The big mind is going to come through that wall and take possession of your body. And it's going to tell you what to do, and you'll do it. And, you know, this can be a big experience, or it can be relatively minor. Not everybody is ready to be possessed by big mind, right? Not everybody wants to be possessed to a great degree. So there's big moves and there's little moves. But to so-called answer the koan, you have to sit in front of the wall, patiently waiting to be possessed by Mu. This is the best explanation I can offer. And basically, it takes some time. It may take 100 years, it may take 100 days. It's all a matter of karma. So, you know, some people are really lucky. You know, they're able to come up to this wall and in not too long, something begins to come out. and possesses them. And other people, like myself, have to wait a long time facing the wall because we have karmic entanglements. You know, so I myself had all kinds of karmic entanglements. I was dying to be special. I was dying to have a great, profound experience. I wanted so much to be something other than an ordinary person, which I definitely was. And I was dissatisfied with my life in all kinds of ways. And the more I practiced Zen, the more terrified I was that I was never going to wake up, that I was never going to be possessed by a big mind. And that just made things worse and worse, you know. So it took me a long time to work through all these obstacles. In fact, you know, the truth is that I didn't have have my breakthrough with Mu until, I've been training maybe 8 years, maybe 7 years before I had my breakthrough with Mu. After that, things came very quickly for me, although the next koan after that was extremely difficult also. Let me put it this way, the first koan took, breath koan took 4 or 5 years, Mu koan took about 4 years, 3 or 4 years, and after that, no other koans took that long. So you can look forward to that. I've mentioned this before, but I once asked Genki Roshi, what was the most number of koans you did at a sesshin? And he said, oh, I can't remember what he said, but it was like 7 or 8. He did like one a day, you know. He went into, he said, oh, I would see Genpo Roshi in the morning, and then I'd give him the answer at night. But it's taken, you know, it took me 5 years just to get through the breath perception. So everybody has different karma, right? You know, everybody has different karma. If you just keep pushing your mind into Mu Xin, what we call Mu Xin, that blankness, however, you will eventually find that it opens up. Other good things happen as a result of this too, by the way. First of all, it's deeply purifying to sit in front of the blank, in front of the wall. It changes your body, mind, and heart in a positive way. It will take away all of your troubles and unhappiness and replace it with patience and joy. Gradually, you will find many of your defects are wearing away, and you are becoming a kinder and a little better person even. You know, some of Zen practice is waiting for the door to open, and some of Zen practice is working on our karma by purifying body, mind, and heart. So sometimes we sit in front of the wall, and instead of being able to push our minds deeply into that darkness, all of this stuff floats up. All of these things that are relics of our life past, or lives past, if you want. And these can be memories. These can be emotions that have been deeply felt. You know, there are people who actually, when they're working with the Mu Koan, just feel real rage. You know, they get mad, or they feel insecure. They feel frightened. All of these are like, this is your karma floating up. Can be utterly trivial things too. But little by little, if you sit facing the wall, you will be transformed. You'll feel better. You'll be healthier. You'll be younger. And even if the door never opens, your life will be better. You know. It's just a matter of sitting there and being transformed until you're ready to let a big mind in. It's a matter of sitting until your heart is open enough to let big mind in. Big mind's ready to come in, even though it doesn't seem that way because the wall seems impenetrable. But really, it's all in you. It's all a matter of finding open-heartedness to let it in. And so if you're not answering your koans, you know, please don't blame Zen. Please don't blame me. Or you can blame me if you want. And actually, don't blame anybody, but recognize that you're holding the door closed. You know, nobody else, you're holding the door closed. So, that's the human condition. We all hold the door closed. So if that's the case in your case, it's not, don't beat yourself up. But please continue to practice. You know, if it never opens up, you'll still have a better life, but it will open up. It's just it's the readiness of time. A monk asked Tozan, "What is Buddha?" Tozan said, 3 pounds of flax." You know, this is one of these koans that requires you to grow a new set of eyes. Once you've penetrated into big mind, or big mind has possessed your body, better way to put it, then basically you're going to develop new ways of experiencing the world. And it takes a little time, because we have all of these, even after big mind has possessed us, we have all of these habits and assumptions that get in the way. But a lot of koans are asking us to notice something about the world from the standpoint of big mind. So you have to enter deep mu shin, deep mu, and then the koan is saying, please notice something. And it's even after answering the mu koan, it's not so easy to do, because it's like you're trying to sprout a new pair of eyes in a world where nobody has eyes. You know, it's tough. But sooner or later, you'll notice. It's a little bit like this, you know, although this is not quite right. I have fascinated also by the experience of people who have had, like, blindness from childhood, and then have had eye surgery, and then they can see. The interesting thing is that once their sight has been restored, they can't just look around and function. It's very interesting, right? You know, they have to learn how to see, even though they have the apparatus. This part is very much like post-mu practice. So you have the apparatus, you're in big mind, but you're still not seeing. And that takes a little time too. Because, you know, people who have had no sight and then their sight is restored have all of this sort of images, but they don't know how to experience it. So, for example, a flat picture of an apple and an apple often look the same to somebody who has had this corrective surgery to restore eyesight. So it takes a long time for people who have never seen to differentiate between an apple and a picture of an apple, because they haven't ever experienced depth. See, you have to coordinate your body experience of space with your visual experience, and that takes a long time. And so people have to learn how to feel, to see depth. Isn't that interesting? And so eventually, one day you're looking at the picture of the apple and the apple, and one day you realize, wait a minute, this one's flat and this one's round, right? Or three-dimensional, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I've been looking at it for a year and suddenly I see it. Well, this is like post-mu practice. It's like there's nothing wrong with your practice. You're deep in mu shin. But you say, but darn it, I can't answer this darn koan, you know? Mu's possessing me, body, mind, and heart. Yes. But it still takes a little time to learn how to see in this other world. So, you know, we take it one step at a time with these koans. One koan is working on a little piece of this, another koan is working on another little piece, another koan is working, you know. So little by little, it's like trying to tell the picture of the apple from the apple. Some koans want you to look at reality very, very, very close up. So you may see things you've never seen before. Some koans may let you look at things you've seen before in a new way. Yeah? It's like once you're possessed by big mind, you have to relearn the whole universe from the standpoint of big mind. So it's one step at a time. Little by little, all of it begins to be your world. And your world becomes Buddha's world. Yeah? Two become the same. So once you are possessed by Mu, this is a big mind encounter. Now, how to live a Buddha's life, right? And the koans after that are how to live Buddha's life. The life from the standpoint of Buddha. But so we take it one step at a time. Don't be frustrated if you can't tell the flat image of the apple from the apple yet. You'll see it. You'll see it. Just keep going into Mu Shin and look, 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 look. And the koan is giving you like a subconscious cue. It's telling, you know, the koan is giving you a subconscious. It's not telling your big mind. It's not telling your little mind where to look. It's telling your big mind where to look. But, you know, we might not be getting the message yet. You know, it's hard to see the apple is not a picture of an apple. It takes a little time. So, little by little, koan by koan, learning to see through Buddha's eyes. And one day, it's a total Buddha everywhere you look. And that's the Daikensho. So everybody here is doing a wonderful job. You know, this morning we all got up and we sat in the Zendo together. It was just wonderful. Everybody's doing a wonderful job. People were practicing, you know, diligently. We've been doing Dokusan. People have come into Dokusan with wonderful answers, really seriously practicing. So I've just sort of laid out for you the whole path, really. And you may be at the beginning, you may be in the middle. You know, it's actually a beautiful path at the beginning. It's a beautiful path in the middle. It's a beautiful path at the end. It's beautiful from start to finish. So I'm very glad you're all here, and it's wonderful to practice with you and to walk this beautiful path together. And you're all open-heartedly practicing the way. So this is day 3. We're all working like the devil, trying to find the breath, or be possessed by Mu, or see with Buddha-seeing eyes, yeah? And, you know, it's just great. So let's keep going.